Srimad Bhagavatam 8th Canto, Chapter 20. Bali Maharaj surrenders the universe. Text 23. Translation.
Thereafter, Bali Maharaj, who was occupying the seat of King Indra, could see the low planetary systems, such as Vasakta, on the soles of the feet of the Lord's universal form.
He saw on the Lord's feet the surface of the globe, on the surface of his toes, all the mountains, on his knees, the various birds, and on his thighs, the varieties of air.
Purple.
The universal situation is described herein in regard to the complete constitution of the Lord's gigantic universal form. The study of this universal form begins from the soul. Above the soles are the feet, above the feet are the calves, above the calves are the knees, and above the knees are the thighs. Thus the complete parts of the universal body, one after another, are described herein. The knees are the place of birds, and above that are varieties of air. The birds can fly over the mountains, and above the birds are varieties of air.
Om Gana Timanam Lissa, Gana Janishalapya, Chakshun Vilikanyam, Tazmai Shri Gurey.
Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sri Vaita Gada Sri Vasati Mohan Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
You may have lost some attachments in your life. You may have had things stripped away from you, pride away from you. You may have been cheated out of some things. Such is the way of material existence, which, as Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita, is characterized by two main phenomena. Sochati, kamshati. Nashochati, kamshati is the preferred state. No hankering, no lamenting. But material life means you are always hankering for what you don't have. Try to see that in your life. I've got to have this. I just need that. And then that. And then that. And if I get this, I'll be okay. We're always hankering. Meanwhile, what is happening while we are hankering, desiring, wanting? It's amazing how innocent we think our desires are. In my travels in North America, the last 6 weeks, I've only have the audience complete a mantra in which they could bask in their innocence. We were studying in Los Angeles about where their cash food and the austerities he performed so he could become invincible. So we always look at someone like Hiranyakashipu, who is such an extraordinary demon, and we say, just how horrible. I am nothing like that. I just have a few innocent desires. Hiranyakashipu wanted to control the whole universe. He even took over the functions of nature. But me? I'm just actually a nice person who has a few desires. And so we can easily demonize our Hiranyakashipu. Ooh, hideous. And ourselves, innocent, well-meaning, modest. So the mantra I have everyone repeat, so they can bask in their self-proclaimed innocence, is all I want is blank. This is how everyone generally justifies themselves. I'm not wanting too much. I just want a few things. All I want is this. What is the problem? And this is what we imply, as I often explain, that if Krishna would kindly grant us those material things we want, we would be more enthusiastic in devotional service. So we try to make a win-win situation at least with Krishna. See, Krishna, you allow me to win in terms of getting certain material attachments, and I'll allow you to win by my serving you. Isn't this the peace formula? Let's say it in one of the A deal! Of course, what is the peace formula as given by Lord Krishna? Bhagavad Gita. Bhuktam Yajato Sam
Sarvaloka Maheshwara
Suvidam Sarvabhutanam Gyatamam Shantam Shanti.
As Prabhupada always repeats,
if you can just grasp and apply these three things, that Krishna is the supreme provider. Krishna is the friend of all living entities. And Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of everything.
You can understand those three things and practically demonstrate that understanding in your life, then indeed you have peace.
But we don't want to hear it all the time. Because we have all I want is blank program. And if I get that, then I'll be enthusiastic in bhakti. I'll even pay attention when I chant. I'll even start training devotees nicely. Yeah, I'll give up criticism for a month at least. And all I want is such and such. Now, let us consider the case of Bali Maharaj. We are having some attachments pry away from us. Or we think that we are failing in attaining some key attachments that are necessary. But Bali Maharaj, just try to understand, he's losing the whole universe. Think about that kind of attachment. Not a home and land or an estate, but the whole universe. He's losing voluntarily. You know how Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf Brahmana boy, came to request three steps of land from Bali Maharaj. Now, Bali Maharaj, he knew this is a supreme personality of God. And of course, that was confirmed by his karmakanda guru, his guru of karmic activity. Not a Vaishnava guru, but a priest, basically, who specialized in giving advice on how to form rituals for the sake of better material service. That's Shukracharya had a whole family line of priests. And he came in a family line of priests, and his children, he was training them up in the same way to be material priests, getting donations, giving lessons of material happiness. His very name, as you know, is that Shukra Sen Acharya. So his qualification for being a so-called acharya was that he was coming in the seminal line. It's biological, his expertise. His father was a priest, his children would be priests. There's no spiritual qualification. Although Shukracharya, as you heard, if you were in previous classes, was smart enough to detect that this Brahmana boy is Vishnu. And he gave his disciple appropriate instructions from him. Appropriate from Shukracharya's point of view. So, Bali Maharaj, he went along with Vishnu coming as Vamanadeva, beautiful little Brahmana boy. Because he thought, if this is the Lord's pastime, if this is his leela, let him enjoy. Why did I go along with it? It's not that if the Lord had come as Vishnu that Bali Maharaj would have refused him. But he understood this is the pastime of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, out of affection, I'll give him whatever he wants. This is bhava. This is loving ecstasy. You know how this plan was hatched because the demigods were lamenting, especially Mother Aditi. She couldn't see her sons. That was her attachment. She's the mother of the devas. And since Bali Maharaj and the demons had chased the devas out of the heavenly planets and out of their positions, Aditi was in exile. I can't see my sons. How can I see my sons again? And so, to rectify the situation, because the demigods aren't devotees, and although they're attached to material power and control, ultimately, when crunch time comes, they go running to the Supreme Personality of God. So, the Lord appeared as Brahmadeva to rectify the situation. Bali Maharaj was engaged in some ritualistic yajnas, and then Vamadeva, the dwarf Brahmana boy, appears. So beautiful. The Shastra describes the appearance of Vamadeva to be like the sun rising nearby. You see the edge of fire, and all of a sudden this beautiful sight appears before you, like the sun has just arisen right next to you. And so Balaram is very taken, of course, by this beautiful Brahmana boy. And he said, I'd like to give you some charity. Because Balaram is a Kshatriya. And giving charity is a main activity for Kshatriyas, Vedic rulers, Vedic governors, administrators. They live opulently and they give away lots of charity. And they're supposed to govern for the benefit of the people. So you might say, well, this sounds like a pretty good deal. You can live opulently, give a bit of charity, and that's what it means to be a government administrator. But no. If any pestilence or famine or climate change or drought, even disease is going on in the land of the ruler, he takes the blame. You can just imagine today, writing to the Prime Minister who just visited here. Excuse me, we got someone in the community who's very sick. You must be doing something wrong. I took a crazy. What did I visit such a place? Or in Waikato, there's too much rain, or there's too little rain. What's the problem with the government down there in the Lehigh? This is crazy. How do you connect the miseries of the body and the mind, the miseries inflicted by nature, how do you connect that to the government? It's got nothing to do with us, they would say. But to be a Vedic governor means you accept full responsibility. Just like in Krishna Lila, the Brahmana who immediately after the birth of his child, the child would disappear. And so the Brahmana went and accused the king. What's going on? You must be doing something wrong. How is it that my children are disappearing immediately after birth? And Arjuna presented himself. I'll show you that indeed there are righteous, upstanding Vedic warriors. So Arjuna, he charged his bow and arrow with mantras, and he waited for the next child to be born. Being proactive. He was going to save the day. He took on full responsibility. Why is this upright Brahma who's following the standard? Why are his children disappearing in the end of childbirth? This is not good. The government has to take full responsibility. So Arjuna was right there when the child, another child was about to be born. And same thing happened. Child gone. And so the Brahmana began to berate Arjuna. Oh, why did I listen to you? You've got no potency. So this is real government. And to be a Kshatriya, like Bali Maharaj, and live opulently, doesn't mean that you just live the high life. You have to take full responsibility. Indeed, in the Vedic system, the head of state takes a fraction of all the karma of the people here that he rules. You get 1/6 of their good karma, and you get 1/6 of their bad karma. So it's very risky being Prime Minister these days. You don't see too much good karma going around. You see a lot of horrible Kali Yuga activities. So many cows being slaughtered. So the Prime Minister or President gets 1/6 of all that bad karma. So, Bali Maharaj, he knows how to have a proper government. Even though he's in a demoniac dynasty. You see, his grandfather was Prahlad Maharaj. And Just as Prahlad was such a crest jewel of a devotee, born in the family of demons, so was his grandson, Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj actually got the seed of pure devotion from Prahlad. And that seed fructified when Bali Maharaj saw Vamanadeva. So actually Bali Maharaj is Kripa Siddha. He's perfect by the mercy of the Supreme Lord and the Guru. Prahlad Maharaj is the Guru. And Prahlad gave him the seed. And when Bali Maharaj saw Lord Vamanadeva, that seed sprouted. Other examples of Kripa Siddha, perfection by mercy, are the Yajnapatnis, the wives of the Brahmas in Krishna Lila. And there's also Shukadeva Goswami. You know how Shukadeva Goswami, from within the womb of his mother, heard Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, it wasn't coming out. He was perfectly immersed in transcendence. He had Brahman realization, the preliminary stage of self-realization. So he, Shukadeva Goswami, thought, inside the womb, outside the womb, what's the difference? I'm understanding everything is non-dual. Why should I fall down by making a distinction between inside the womb and outside the womb? If I think this material situation is good and that material situation is bad, I'm not Brahman realized. I'm making material distinction for the purpose of bodily comfort. So if I'm actually Brahman realized, understanding everything is the all-pervading Brahman, why should I leave the womb? Everything is all the same. I'm not going to make any material distinctions. That's what it means to be Brahman realized. Of course, bhakti, devotional service to Krishna, is beyond Brahman realization. And when Shukadeva Goswami heard his father Vyasadeva speaking Bhagavatam, he decided, this is the reason to come out of the womb, to glorify the Supreme Personality of God. This is beyond Brahman. If I come out of the womb, I'll be able to do more service by going here and there glorifying Krishna. So therefore, I'll come out of the womb. In other words, the devotee makes distinctions regarding the material energy in terms of Krishna's service. This is good for Krishna's service. This is not so good for Krishna's service. Otherwise, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the bhakti yogi sees petals and gold all to be the same. Pieces of stone and gold, it's all the same to a devotee. The question is, what can be engaged in Krishna's service in the best way? That's how we analyze what is good, what is bad. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains this in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Dvaita Bhadra Bhadra Sabha. The material distinction for the purpose of your own benefit, distinguish that this is a good situation, this is a bad situation, that is all imaginary. It's a mental speculation. The devotee distinguishes based on what's best for Krishna's service. This is the life, this is the love life of the bhakti yogi, making distinctions for Krishna's pleasure. And you can feel that love life in you developing as you become more and more dedicated to Krishna's service, and you have to think, it would be better for me to do this for Krishna or do that for Krishna. Neophyte bhakti means, I want to serve Krishna, but I want to serve Krishna in a way that makes me feel good. So, what would make me feel good while serving Krishna? Now, of course, the devotee is serving Krishna. That's nice, but he's motivated. Like when we're chanting Hare Krishna in Kirtan or Japa. Am I chanting because I want to feel good? Okay, that's nice, but that's the beginning stage. Gradually, as the holy name purifies you, you realize you are chanting for Krishna's pleasure. You're chanting, praying that Krishna will pay attention to your chanting because it pleases him. You chant to give Krishna pleasure. All the musical arts actually originate in Goloka Vrindavan. The gopis, they are the masters of various art forms which are 100% simply used to give Krishna pleasure. So, we advance in spiritual life when we start making decisions in terms of what is best for Krishna. And this is a great privilege. It's actually how love develops. Just think in terms of yourself. If someone's always thinking about you, how can I do the thing that will give you the most pleasure? You would feel quite satisfied. Yeah, this is what life is all about. Probably most men, when they marry, they hope for that. Yeah. They'll be dealing with someone who's simply thinking, you know, how you're going to be satisfied. So, the real principle of acting for someone's satisfaction is bhakti. You start making decisions not about what's best for you, but what would give Krishna the most pleasure. This is how the love life in bhakti develops. But in the beginning, of course, we want relief. I don't want to suffer anymore. I heard that by chanting Hare Krishna, we don't suffer anymore. Sign me up yet. I'm exhausted. I've been chewed up and spit out of my material existence. I've been a party animal and just totally depleted myself. Destroy my self-esteem being with this hookup, that hookup. Let me chant Hare Krishna. Let me taste happiness that way. This is intelligent. Nevertheless, as the bhakti develops, there's higher levels waiting for you, in which you don't worry about your own pleasure. You know that just by serving Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, you'll be taken care of. Why should you waste energy thinking about what's going to happen to your pleasure? Why not just focus on Krishna's pleasure? This is the mystery of bhakti. The more you focus on Krishna's pleasure, actually the more you taste pleasure, but you don't think about that. This is the mystery of Vrindavan. Whereas Srila Krishna's Kaviraj song explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the gopis never did anything for their own pleasure. They didn't dress for their own pleasure, they didn't comb their hair for their own pleasure, they didn't perfume their transcendental bodies for their own pleasure. Everything was simply done by their thinking, let Krishna enjoy by seeing me. Let Krishna enjoy by smelling the fragrances. That's all. So the paradox is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That although the gopis never thought of their own pleasure, and they never were concerned whether they got pleasure or not, Krishna forced pleasure on them. They were never thinking about it, but Krishna would force it upon them. This is the mystery of bhakti. So, back to Bali Maharaj. He was performing rituals for good karma, material prosperity. And that's when Mahamudev showed up, looking so stunningly beautiful, like the sun rising nearby. So, Bali Maharaj, he, with Kshatriya confidence and enthusiasm, said, my dear Brahmana boy, you look quite beautiful. I always give charity to qualified Brahmanas. What would you like? Bear in mind that no one in my family line has ever failed to give charity to Brahmanas. So, ask me whatever you want. You can have villages, you can have elephants, you can have beautiful Brahmana girls for your wives. You just ask me whatever. Gold, piles of gold, and I give it to you. And what was Mahamudev's response? You can just give me 3 steps of land. And Bali Maharaj replied, my little boy, you must be quite an inexperienced Brahmin. You don't have to ask for donations. have to give you some fundraising lessons. You're coming to me, and I can give you planets, and you're just asking for 3 steps of land? You must be a very inexperienced, immature Vanda. Reconsider, please. And what was Vanda Day's very ominous reply? He said, actually, someone who's not satisfied with 3 steps of land can be satisfied if he possesses the whole universe. and then you get into a tizzy. You can't discriminate between wants and needs. I want it, therefore I need it. I need it, therefore I want it. This is the person, the average person of today cannot distinguish between wants and needs. It's like everyone thinks the world owes them something. Other people owe me a good time. My own body and mind, they owe me happiness. Nature owes me ample facility and resources so I can increase my power and transcend obstacles for my material goals. So Vamanadeva gave some very important instructions about dissatisfaction. And remember Krishna's statement, if you don't have peace, you can't have happiness. Without peace, there's no chance for happiness. And peace means freedom from dissatisfaction. So much of our preliminary bhakti training is about learning to live with yourself. And you'd be shocked. That's a scary thing for most people today. They can't face themselves. They can't be with themselves. I'm sure you know examples of friends or relatives who cannot stay peaceful in a quiet house. They have to have a TV on in every room, a radio on in the kitchen. Because they don't want to have to think about themselves. They need distractions. They can't live without distractions. There's no peace. They don't want to face themselves. So an essential foundation for bhakti culture is you have to learn to live with yourself. And you can't just wait for that magic person to come along who's going to live your life for you. I can't live it myself, but anyway, what does it matter as long as I'm with you? It doesn't work like that. Each individual has a responsibility to learn to live with himself or herself. Then you can stand on your own two feet and be of benefit to a partner or be of benefit to a community or to the world. But if we haven't taken the necessary steps to live with ourselves, to learn how to do that, to be peaceful, then how are we going to be of any value to a husband, to a wife, to children, to a community, to the world? The whole world's full of persons who are dissatisfied. They can't live with themselves. They have to be distracted nonstop. So therefore, how is there going to be peace? And without peace, there'll never be happiness. So this is, in essence, what Vamanadeva explained to Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj said, all right, you just want 3 steps to land, so be it, no problem. At that point, what happened? Shukracharya stepped in.
Wait a minute, my disciple.
You are deviating from the Shastra. You don't understand this Brahmana boy is Vishnu. He's coming to you in the guise of a Brahmana boy, and he's going to take everything. With his first step, he's going to cover all the land with this in the whole universe. With the second step, he's going to cover all the space in the universe. You're not going to have a place where you can put his third step. Your promise will fail, and you'll go to hell for making a promise that you can't keep. And then Shukracharya began to give some political religiosity meant for preserving the donations that Shukracharya was going to get from Bali Maharaj. He said, look, you've got to perform religion in such a way that your economic base is not threatened. And of course, your economic base is my economic base because you give me donations. So let's be practical. Let's not get carried away here with too much religion here. So then Shukracharya began to explain material religion, prosperity religion. He said, in order to perform religious activities like yajnas, giving charity, in order to do all that, you need money. You see? So the first consideration. when it comes to being spiritual is money. You need a healthy bank balance in order to practice Dharma. So if something threatens the money, your religiosity is threatened. Your Dharma is finished if your money is finished. Now, Shukracharya continued to explain, I know that you made a promise. You promised you're getting whatever you want. But I'll get you out of here, don't worry. Shukracharya was like an expert word judge and lawyer. I'll get you out of your promise. You see, I know that when you promised him that you'd have whatever you wanted, you didn't precede the promise with OM. So according to a very remote Vedic shastra, if a promise is not preceded by OM, it can be broken. It's not a real promise. So just keep that in mind. Furthermore, another shastra. It is stated that falsity in certain situations is not an offense. This is Shukracharya's presentation, by the way. Don't shoot the messenger. If you make false promises in talking to a woman and trying to bring her under your control, that's allowed according to Shastra. If you make false promises while you're joking, that's okay. At a marriage ceremony, if you make false promises to glorify the groom, that's okay. It's a social event, everyone understands. If you make false promises to protect cows or brahmanas, that's fine. If you tell untruths in trying to protect someone from attack by an enemy, that's also fine. So, in other words, Shukracharya was explaining to Bodhidharma, there are ways to get out of your promise. You don't have to feel that you are making an offense. And here's the ultimate reason. You see, in order to be religious, you need money. So therefore, to a certain extent, it is justifiable that if someone comes to you and asks for charity, it's okay, to a certain extent, to lie and say, I'm sorry, I've given all my funds away. I don't have any more donations. I can't give any more donations. It's okay to do that to a certain extent. There are three reasons why it's okay. Number one, it protects your money. Number two, you get the compassion of others. Oh, he doesn't have any money. He couldn't give any donations. He's not doing too well. We feel sorry for him. So you get others to feel compassion upon you when you make this false display. Sorry, I can't give donations, I'm just in a tough time, Others start to feel compassion for you, and you also protect your wealth. And number three, it gives you opportunity to collect donations because you're poor. So for these three reasons, it's okay to tell a lie that you don't have any money. You can say that. But don't do it all the time, because then you're condemned. If you just do it some of the time, it's okay. It's religious. Take it from me, Shukracharya. Coming in the line of Shukra. That's his qualification. So he instructed Bali Maharaj in that way. And what did Bali Maharaj do? He began to think very deep. What is going on here? What kind of guru do I have? He's not representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's just Karmakanda. He's just a fruit of activity priest who doesn't understand that real Dharma is to surrender to Krishna. I'm trying to give everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's telling me not to? So Bali Maharaj thought long and deep. This Shukracharya is not qualified. He thought long and deep because it's a very momentous decision. I don't have a guru who's representing Krishna. I have a specialist, a family priest specialist in karmakanda and how to do good karma, counteract bad karma with good karma. That's not a guru. So Bali Maharaj then and there decided, I'm going to disobey him. I'm going to give the Brahmana boy indeed what I promised. But Bali Maharaj had to, he's a politician also, he's a king. So he understood, I don't want to break the hearts of my demoniac associates. I can't just say, I'm doing this for pure devotion. I've got to give some material reasons just to pacify them. So Bali Maharaj started explaining, well, this is a chance. By giving this Brahmana boy what he wants, it's a chance for fame. I'm going to lose my wealth anyway at the time of death. So if I can gain eternal fame by giving things I'm going to lose anyway at the time of death, I should do that. Because the whole goal of life is to get fame. So many Kshatriyas would love to have the opportunity I had. It's more potent, this opportunity, than a Kshatriya is getting a battle opportunity. Remember what Krishna said in the Gita, happy are those Kshatriyas who such battles come unsought, a chance to stand up and fight for Dharma. Happy are those Kshatriyas. Such opportunities are the gateway to the heavenly planets. So Bali Maharaj told Sri Pachari, even more than a noble fighting opportunity, even more value and glory for the Kshatriya than a noble fighting opportunity is a chance to give charity in such a way you'll get eternal fame. How can I pass this up? Fame is what it's all about. Now, Vishnuchari Thakur explains that Bali Maharaj is not into fame, but in order to just pacify the hearts of his demoniac associates, he said like that. Actually, Bali Maharaj is simply into pure devotion, and he's seizing the chance to give everything to Vishnu, and in that way, render his devotional service simply for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he'll do that. He'll ignore what Shukracharya says. Shukracharya curses him. Okay, you're going to lose all your material opulence. I curse you. You disobeyed me. But Bali Maharaj doesn't care. He knows he has the opulence of bhakti, which is incomparable. So indeed, he gets his water bottle. That's a signal that I'm going to do this. I'm going to fulfill my promise. His wife brings a jug of water. She's ecstatic. She's a devotee, Vinjavali. Oh, my husband is giving everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let me bring the water jug. She goes, you might think she would be very, very concerned. Wait a minute. My husband's giving away all the riches. This is a bit too much here. It's going too far. Too much bhakti. No, the Shastra says she was ecstatic. Wow, what a glorious husband. Yes, let's get on with it. We'll give everything to Mother Day. That's how saintly the job is. So, in this way, Lord Mother Day started to take his steps. And Bali Maharaj could see the universal form of the Lord, which is actually imaginary. But the Lord can show such a vision as a means of meditation, although he's not the universal form. It's a way of meditating on the Supreme Absolute Truth for those who are attached to nature and the cosmos. But it's not that the Supreme Personality of God is the Vishwarupa, is the universal form. He can show it from time to time. And it's a temporary production. It's like a multimedia show that the Supreme Lord shows. But he's not it. So in this way, Bali Maharaj, in today's verse, is seeing all the different parts of the cosmos as being situated in the Lord's universal form. And of course, as we said, that universal form is a temporary production which helps those attached to matter to see the whole cosmos as the Supreme. But actually, of course, the Lord has his own individual existence beyond the cosmos. Beyond everything, he has his own individuality and personality. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.